Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what European institution awards the annual De La Vega Prize to young European researchers who distinguish themselves by outstanding research on the securities markets in Europe? Joseph De La Vega was a successful Jewish merchant, poet, and philanthropist residing in 17th century Amsterdam. He became famous for his masterpiece, Confusion of Confusions, the oldest book ever written on the stock exchange business. Joseph was born in Spain, but when he was still young, he went to Amsterdam, where he began to write. He became a respected merchant and an elegant Spanish poet, and filled the honorary offices of President of the Academia de los Sitibundos and Secretary of the Academia de los Floridos, which were Spanish cultural salons. De La Vega wrote over 200 letters to different princes and statesmen and was a prolific author. Sue Burke is a certified translator specializing in historical texts, that is, in medieval and Renaissance Spanish. She's recently completed a translation of Joseph de la Vega's Confusion of Confusions, a project funded by the CNMV, which is the agency in charge of supervising and inspecting the Spanish stock markets, much like the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States. She spoke with us about the book and its author. Thank you very much for speaking with us, Sue. Can you tell us first a little bit about Joseph de la Vega?
Joseph de la Vega was born in Spain to a family that were Portuguese Jews that had come to Spain. He was born in 1650. His father, though, was imprisoned by the Inquisition. Apparently, they were still practicing Jews, just trying to hide it. And when he got out of prison, he had decided while he was in it, he was going to leave to somewhere where he could practice his faith. And so he first went to Hamburg and brought his family with him, and finally to Amsterdam. They were very successful businessmen, both he and most of his children.
I was really surprised that he was born in Spain in 1650 and was a practicing Jew. I mean, you would have thought that they would have gotten out earlier.
Well, they came from Portugal, which had a slightly different history. And again, they were trying to hide it, but it didn't work.
So, in Amsterdam, tell us a little bit about what happened there, what their life was like, or what they were doing there in Amsterdam.
Well, as I say, his father was a very successful businessman, and he's particularly remembered in his own time because he gave away a lot of money to charitable causes. Joseph studied in Spain before he left, and then at some other universities he came back to Spain for a little more study of literature. And although his family wanted him to become a rabbi, he decided to become a writer and was extraordinarily successful at that. He wrote so many books, we don't even know all of them. And he would write poems for people's weddings or funerals and was very, very highly thought of in his time. One thing about his style, though, was this was pretty much the end of the Baroque, and he ended it at the peak of Spanish Baroque style. It was involved, it was flowery, full of puns and complex, very, very erudite. This man knew pretty much all of mythology, all of the Roman authors, had read several versions of the Bible, a lot of Spanish literature at the time, and he would work that all into what he was doing with a lot of puns and a lot of jokes when he wanted to.
So he wrote in Spanish?
Yes. He wrote one work when he was a teenager, a play that was in Hebrew, and was well received. But after that, he only wrote in Spanish.
Even in Amsterdam?
Yes. In Amsterdam, there were a lot of what they called the Portuguese, but they were really Jews from Iberia. And there were quite a few of them, and they carried on a large and lively Spanish-speaking culture at the time.
So was he widely published as well?
Oh, yeah. He was widely published, widely thought of. He headed two literary associations during his lifetime.
Tell us a little bit about Confusion of Confusions, which is basically about the stock market. Why do you think he chose this topic?
Well, because he was involved in the stock market. He had some money that he invested, although he admits he didn't do terribly well. He wrote about a whole variety of activities as well as novels, but he wanted to create a work that would epitomize everything he was trying to do with his style as a Baroque writer, but that would also tell some of the philosophy behind the stock market. At the time, the stock market was fairly new, but rapidly becoming extraordinarily important, so that this was a good topic to write about, to share what he had learned and what he had seen.
Tell us more about this book.
The book is written in dialogue format, where he talks to potential investors, supposedly, to potential merchants, to people who don't understand very much about what's going on in the stock market, and tries to explain the philosophy behind it. But he also gets into some technical things. They had, as they do now, short sales, futures, put and call agreements, hedges, options. People were rigging the market. There was rampant speculations, insider trades. He explains how people would plant rumors. For example, some guy would be walking by. He would accidentally drop a letter that supposedly carried some news that would affect stock market prices, dishonest brokers, all variety of ways that people were trying to affect the market for their own good, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. And then what people would do to try to counteract what other people were trying to do.
Was any of this regulated legally yet, or was it still too soon?
Oh, it was regulated legally, and some of the things that were going on were, at best, not well thought of and could have got, well, did get people into trouble, but the same as now, it happened anyway.
So can you give us an example of his writing?
Here's, he's describing some of the people who get involved and why, and to what, and what happens to them. People of diverse customs, different nations, and a variety of trades embark for this new world of business. Astrologers become enthusiastic, boasting that they have spotted their own star amid all the others. The barber works happily because he can shave something off everyone. The doctor comes to treat wounds and apply bandages during battles, and soon learns not to treat injuries right away. The shoemaker believes he can fit the same shoe to everyone. The sculptor accustoms himself to carving them from stone so that some men will not sense outrage and seek furious revenge. Finally, no courtesan studies this business to acquire patience, no rustic to become inured to disdain, nor the French to fury, the English to pride, the Turk to noise, the Italian to disguise, the Flemish to phlegm, the German to arrogance, the Polish to flight, or the Spanish to profanity.
Can you tell us about this translation? Who ordered it, and what was your part in it?
Yeah, this was done by the Comisión Nacional del Mercado de Valores, that is the Spanish Stock Market Commission. And they did this because this was published in 1688, and they wanted to do it because it was their 30th anniversary, and they wanted to create an institutional gift. And this seemed like the logical thing. It's worth noting that there is a European prize called the European Securities Exchange has had an award since 2000 called the De La Vega Prize to young European researchers who distinguish themselves by outstanding research in the securities market in Europe. And so they wanted something that they could give as an institutional gift that would be very meaningful to people in the stock market business.
I understand that there was a translation in 1957 into English of this book. How is this translation different? Is it a bilingual edition? Can you tell us a little bit about the edition?
Yeah, it's partially bilingual. They have the entire book in there, and then they have excerpts that are translated from it. The other translation, which I've seen, has some different excerpts. This one was chosen in part to pick out some of the more entertaining sections, but also some of the ones that presented a better example of his style of writing, because they have it in Spanish, so if you can read Spanish, you can read the whole thing. But for people who don't read Spanish, that they could understand how entertaining this book is.
Okay, so give us another entertaining excerpt.
Right. Well, now he does invest and admits that he doesn't invest very well, but he has learned some things about how to do it that is successful. He says, "Thus stocks are for the most dispassionate mind. If viewed from the perspective of sellers, stock prices seem headed toward ruin. Viewed from the side of buyers, they seem to rise to the heavens. From wherever they are viewed, they seem to tilt accordingly. So, I adhere to my axiom. With stocks, our greatest skill is to close our eyes and do the first thing that occurs to us." He points out that the book is called Confusion for Confusions for a reason, in part to try to evoke some idea of Babel and the confusion of languages, but also that there's so much going on that no single person can really manage it all and can manage their money with any sort of absolute certainty.
So you definitely think that this has relevance today.
I have a stockbroker friend, and I sent him a copy as a gift, and he read it, and he said, "This is all these things are happening right now, all of these different kinds to maneuver the market, all of the confusion. It's a very relevant book for what goes on now."
That's a little scary.
Yeah, well, he says, do the first thing that occurs to us. They've actually done experiments where they've just put stocks on the wall, thrown darts at it, and followed how those stocks do, and it's just as good as if you picked them by hand.
So it's like buying the lottery.
There are some things you can do to improve your profitability, certain plans that you can make, but in predicting what's going to happen in 1 year or 5 years, no.
Has this book already been published? Or when and where was it published, or will it be published?
Well, this book, as I say, was published as an institutional gift, so the only way you can get it is to be friends with the Spanish stock market. But there are some other English translations. You mentioned one. I think there's one in Dutch and one in German. And you can find the whole thing on the Internet in Spanish if you want.
How long is it?
It is a very long book. A lot of it, though, he goes off on tangents. As I said, he was a very erudite man, and he wants to illustrate some point, and he will spend 2 pages explaining how this corresponds to something that happened in Greek mythology, some incident in Greek mythology. So some of the length is devoted to that, which is entertaining, but doesn't necessarily deal with the stock market per se very much.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
I laughed out loud when I read this the first time. It's full of puns, it's full of plays on words.
That must have been hard to translate.
Yeah, but there are techniques that you can do. You can substitute one joke for another. Some of them, by great good fortune, were the same. But my challenge was to maintain the level of entertainment that was here, and also to be accurate. One difficult part was he knows a great deal more about Greek mythology and Roman history than I do. And so I had to do some research to make sure that I was understanding it correctly. Also, some of the terminology he used has changed over time, and I had to bring that up into modern English and do some research with help from the Mercado to figure out how you say those things in English today.
You said that this new book is excerpts. How were the excerpts chosen? Did you choose them, or did the Mercado choose them?
There was actually a university researcher who chose them. He had done some research into the book, and he was the one who picked them out on the basis of their contribution to literature more than anything else. And the book was also published with some comments by other researchers about Joseph de la Vega and his life and work, how the paragraphs relate to the literature of his time and our own time. There was a presentation, and one of the researchers pointed out that this whole thing is an example, quote, of the catastrophic depletion of human capital that Spain suffered in the 16th and 17th centuries as a result of intolerance and sectarianism. De la Vega was not the only person who left Spain, obviously. There were a lot of them. And what they could have contributed to Spain, had they been allowed to stay, would have changed the country entirely.
Well, can we finish with another quote?
Okay, well, I can give you two. They're both pretty short. One talks about how people behave in the market. When unexpected news arrives at the shareholder exchange, at first glance, some will believe that each new circumstance resembles a lion about to attack, a beast that will devour them. They lose hope for profits and in the end discover, with as much shame as sorrow, that the teeth belong to rumor mongers and the claws to ambition. So they made no head or tails from what they imagined, and they lost their own head by selling. And finally, this is a paragraph that comes almost at the end of the book, when he's talking about the general philosophy of life as well as stock markets. And he says about a Greek philosopher, Isocrates said that people with vices should be branded like oxen so we could avoid corruption. But as I understand it, nature does not do so for two reasons. First, because we can quickly distinguish the vicious by their deeds. And second, because the virtuous would grieve to see that their numbers are so inferior to their opponents.
Thank you very much, Sue.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.